your own radio station how long ago?
Well, you've always been very, very generous in bringing that up. I'm afraid it's long in the past, and I raised the white flag.
Well, you did, but you know, we will all raise the white flag one way or another at one point. What year was it we were broadcasting?
It was 91 in Venice.
And you actually had your own station, and
well, I mean, it was intended to be a community station, but mm-hmm. I envy the quality that you've given to your show, because it's wonderfully it's much much more of a community thing than anything I was ever able to accomplish.
Well, I think some credit has to be given to the Free Radio Santa Cruz Collective, who, in whatever my disputes with them, and they have been several. They've kept this station going. I don't do the equipment here. I come into the station, and you know, the magic masters set things up and replace. Like, you know, you come in and there are new turntables, or at least they're usable turntables, and the equipment actually works if I only knew how to use it. So I mean, I just
not going to get out of this, Robert. I know that you do what you do, and that's what I'm saluting, is what you do, not what you don't do. It was clear that you were
takes a lot of people to keep this
on this,
and it takes people like yourself
by mechanical ignorance and mechanical failures.
Well, Tom, it takes people like yourself and out in the community listening and calling in to make this a station that's worth listening to. I mean, I could go on for years, and, you know, I suppose some people find that interesting. I do, certainly. But, you know, it's this dialogue, this back and forth, even with critics, even with people I consider bigoted, that it's important to do.
That's it. I mean, I think that's what creates the quality of the show, is that you really are interested, whereas the so-called talk shows, I've never met anyone that was with the exception of myself when I was on the air. I was really interested too, and in what people had to say and wanted to hear them say it. And I think talk show hosts that seems to be completely beyond what happens in any talk show. They simply want to turn you off as soon as you ask a question that...
Well, mainstream radio, you know, they have their commercial sponsors, and they have their rigid schedules. In fact, that's the reason free radio does not seek a license from the FCC. First of all, we wouldn't get one, because we say fuck on the air, you know, heavens to Betsy.
That's right.
You know, but also because we have a format where we are concerned about, you know, I mean, this is, we call it free speech radio, but it's also radio, obviously, that's concerned with a certain segment of opinion. I mean, if you want to do Nazi shows, you should start your own radio station, because the collective will not, you know, sanction that here. I mean, that's, so the free speech is limited.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are, you know, within those limits, and it's unlimited in the sense that I would not move to shut down a radio station broadcasting white supremacist thoughts, or, you know, whatever crazy stuff, or, you know, deluded, what I consider deluded or bigoted material. That is, I think the First Amendment is an important thing. But what's important here is that we have, and I'm surprised that other people haven't done this, did what you did and set up a station in Venice, and what the collective did here, set up a station here in Santa Cruz. You know, we are still struggling, although I hear the FCC is, by the way, attacking stations. They've gone to Berkeley, I guess, three times in the last year. They've approached, three or four times, approached the Berkeley Free Radio, Berkeley, I guess it's called Berkeley Liberation Radio.
Is Dunifer still connected with that?
You know, I think he is. He's not officially connected with it, because he was barred by court injunction from being involved. So another group of people's pretty much, you know, some of them have been connected with it, but they weren't named in the injunction. They came back and started a second station. And there's now a debate within that station whether to proceed to try to get a license, which, of course, is a futile enterprise given the current laws, or the regulations, I should say, governing the FCC.
Not only futile, it's completely contradictory to the whole idea of
right.
once you've got their permission, you've got to obey them.
That's for sure. And of course, you internalize the fears and the strictures, and that's, of course, the worst. Because it becomes a part of your own agenda, and you start infecting other people with it and restricting other people with it. But we don't do that here, as you can see.
I know, and I feel that, I mean, I don't know how many supremacists you have that call you up, but I suspect, see, it isn't just the, I mean, of course, one wouldn't offer a show to somebody whose views were completely diametrically opposed to the ones shared called you up on your show, that you would ask the questions that would permit him or herself to trip themselves up.
Oh, I've actually had Nazis on the air. I mean, you know, I've had a Nazi guest in the studios, and you know, it was a homeless person who had those views, and I thought, you know, we discussed it at length. That was 5 years ago.
There you go.
But you know, it happens, and I think it's important to do. Of course, it's also, you know, little, you know, I think there are other things that are more important to do, but that's certainly, you know, as important as anything else.
Sure. Sure.
It shouldn't be censored in any way. So, hey.
Hey, I just I did want to thank you and to just to honor the way you're handling this show. I know you've been doing it for a number of, well, ever since the show the station started, and I can't think of anybody doing it better.
Thank you.
And as I say, you deserve a country that my own history, which I might as well bring you up to date on quickly, is that I ran up the white flag recently. I was several months ago, before 9/11, but not long before 9/11. I was writing to a radio station, to a telephone company, with a battle that I carried on successfully, although it's turned me gray, with not paying taxes on a First Amendment right. Is the, you know, would apply to the radio, to the phone company, as well as
even withholding federal phone tax
levied on the cable.
Withholding federal phone tax or state, which tax?
We're withholding all taxes. It is simply not permissible to tax a First Amendment right under any possible interpretation of the First Amendment. I mean, you can't tax a right. If you tax a right, then it's not a right. It's a privilege. And increasingly, if you notice, the word right is disappearing from the mainstream and being replaced by privilege. In other words, we don't have any rights that the government has to respect. We have only privileges that the government grants.
Hear, hear.
And anyway, I was writing once more, and then three things happened in quick succession that just convinced me that the illusion on which I had based my activity for nearly 30 years, about 30 years, which was that we have law in this country and that we have a constitution and a bill of rights in this country, simply do not exist. That, you know, what we have is a veneer of hypocrisy. And that if we don't have that, the only nonviolent weapon we have to resist tyranny and usurpation and basically fascism is the law. And once the law is taken away from us, once we become convinced, as it took me 30 years to become convinced finally, that there is no law in this country except the law of the jungle, then there really isn't anything to do except A, put on blinders, which is the choice, I would say, of a vast majority, or B, escape to some other country, or C, or possibly into inner space, or C, the Timothy McVeigh action, which was...
Are you announcing a terrorist action here, perhaps?
No, I'm not announcing. No, not at all. I'm saying that there is nothing, really, there's nothing effective in a country that has no law than some form of violence, whatever it happens to be. I mean, or simply to grin and bear it and just hope to try to avoid where the axe falls.
Sure, there are, you know, there have been alternatives in other countries. I mean, Gandhi successfully mobilized millions of both first South Africans and then Indians to resist unjust laws, not through the courts, but through mass civil disobedience. And I mean, I don't know if that's been used here, of course, successfully in some cases.
When you can find me another Gandhi, I'll rethink all this. It doesn't seem to me that he wasn't operating in a totally capitalist environment either.
No, he was definitely not a capitalist, no, sir.
What? I'm sorry?
He was not a capitalist, no.
That's right. Correct?
Yes. Well, listen, I want to thank you for calling in, Tom. I'm going to roll.
Okay.
Good to hear you. Stay well.
Good luck. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And yes, fan letters and attractive sexual partners may apply at 427-3772. Actually, you can't letters and you can't really apply. But you can call in to 427-3772. I'm, of course, running over time again. I have an hour left, but I promised to play this tape by Cracky. However, there is a more immediate thing coming up on the City Council agenda. It's mentioned on the, at the 3 o'clock agenda. It is item 24, the Kennedy Premack Porter changes in the camping ban, which are pretty darn minor. But actually, in talking to Chris Fredrickson, who's the attorney to be for Camp Paradise, who's been working on that, on appealing the Camp Paradise cases under the necessity defense, she was pleased that Crone, quote, kept his word that, that some items that he said were on the agenda were on the agenda, and they are, although they're pretty bad, and I'm going to run through what they are. They remove a non-existent restriction on vehicular camping and sleeping in church parking lots. We already talked about this from Section 6.36020D2. The authors of this apparently believe that there is currently a three-day-per-month restriction on parking your vehicle in a church parking lot. There isn't. There's no such restriction, so it's an unnecessary addition. It adds new only three days a month restrictions on backyards, side yards, and business parking lots. So there, it makes it more restrictive. And the reason they're doing this, I think, is not because they have some particular problem with people parking in those places. People can't really use those places much. I mean, some backyards get used occasionally. Camp Paradise was able to stay in a backyard for a couple of days, actually, while it was juggling the New Brighton Beach polka do-si-do, because you have to stay outside New Brighton Beach for a couple of days before you go back in there again. That's the state park they've been staying in and will be coming out of, I understand, shortly. They have to set up camp, and I'm going to actually call Camp Paradise and ask them about that. But there's not a lot of use of backyards and side yards and business parking lots for emergency shelter for 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people. People I talk to usually have to go to public property somewhere, and it's illegal to sleep, cover up with a blanket, or set up a tent on public property in Santa Cruz City at all, period. Yeah, that's it. And so, again, we're looking at the changes in the law. So this adds restrictions to the area, to these areas, to backyards and to business parking lots. There's only 3 days now. And the reason they're doing this is because they're misreading. It's a sort of a lawyer's misreading of the current ordinance. They think that they're simply repeating what is in the ordinance, but it isn't. They think that it's kind of a complicated thing to try to explain on the air. You have to see the law as it's laid out. But Barisone, the city attorney, is making the same mistake that Porter, Kennedy, and Premack are making in thinking that the law is different than it is. If you talk to the Homeless Services Center, if you talk to homeless people, you learn that there is no three-day restriction for businesses, there is no three-day restriction for churches, there is no three-day restriction for side or backyards. The only place there is a three-day restriction is 3 days per month because of Fitzmaurice, as I explained earlier in the show, in a private driveway. There you are only allowed 3 days per month. But it is tacked on to the end of that section, which precedes the other three sections, and or actually which follows the other three sections, backyards and business and church parking lots. So it looks like the three-day-a-month thing applies to the entire section. It does not. But Kennedy, Premack, and Porter and Barisone were not clear enough to understand this, and also didn't understand this because they didn't talk to any homeless activists, of course, about the issue. They just rammed right ahead with their own proposals without any kind of discussions with the people who've been working on this thing for decades. I don't just mean me. I mean people like David Silva, Becky Johnson, Sherry Connable. I mean people like Michael Schmidt, who, by the way, I'm going to try to get on the phone for a brief update on the situation as he goes around from place to place getting news of what's happening with his constituents. He actually goes out, he's running for supervisor, and though I haven't endorsed him per se, I've certainly commended him for his work on homeless civil rights issues, and he's been incredibly energetic and I would say effective within his own realm in that, although he's been blackballed by Marty Wormhout, the progressive politicians like Crone, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice. Throughout.
Hi, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz looking for Michael Schmidt.
Just a moment.
And we are, of course, on the line trying to get a hold of Mr. Schmidt.
Hey, he's here. What's going on?
Hey, Michael Schmidt, you're live on Free Radio.
Oh, really? What's happening?
Well, we want to know from you what's happening. We wanted to get a quick 3-minute update on how things have been for the last week. We know that you didn't show up at the PREMAC fundraiser. Why was that?
Well, I was out knocking on another 250 doors, figuring that meeting the voters was more important than stuff in my face.
Well, your priorities are all screwed up there,
I know. It's tough when you're running for political office, I'll tell you.
Now, are you still claiming that these vagabond, bum, homeless people should be allowed to sleep at night?
Well, I think, yeah, we need to have, I don't think there should be criminals for it, for that for certain.
Well, wait a minute. Are you going to let them sleep anywhere and everywhere they want, all over the just camp and crap on people's front yard? Well, what's wrong with you, Schmidt?
Well, I think we need to have a programmed approach that includes a program that's developed by homeless people that are trying to live in this situation, and people who are going to be able to provide services and support. It just can't be willy-nilly. I don't think that would be acceptable by anybody in the community on a long-term basis, but I do think that we need to be able to find strategic locations that meet community needs and meet homeless needs, and develop a programmed approach so that people who find themselves in this situation won't have to worry about getting arrested for. You there?
I'm still here.
Okay, get arrested for the mere act of sleeping.
But until we find that programmed approach, we have to keep sleeping illegal, right?
Pardon me?
Until we find that program and that place to put homeless people, sleeping should remain a crime, right?
Well, I would hope that we would set up a moratorium where we don't write any tickets and we don't cause additional hardship for people who are already in this situation, and that we should be able to do so in a very quick time. It shouldn't be something that takes 6 months to a year. It should be able to take, 30 days. We should be able to come up with a strategic plan that works, and if it doesn't, we tweak it till we get it right.
Right, but until there is such a plan, it's best to keep the sleeping ban on the books, right?
Well, I'm not in favor of repealing the sleeping ban. What I am in favor of the camping ban, but of the sleeping ban, yeah, I think we need to modify it or change it or eliminate it or kill it, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm. What's the issue that concerns voters most that you've seen in the last week? You've been knocking on doors.
It's still the top three issues I hear time and time again: traffic, housing affordability, and the growth of the university.
Mm-hmm. You mean elevating Robert Norris to national prominence is not really up there for...
I don't get a lot of those comments.
I see. talk show.
I'm sorry, Robert. I'll try to do better PR for you next time.
Any events coming up you want to let the community know about? I know you've been concerned about the university's affordable housing grab. You've been concerned about the university's impact on the community, and I have too, because we had a guy on today talking about how they arrested a guy for petitioning up there. Becky Johnson, when she went up to campus, was not allowed to table. She was told she couldn't table up there, even though she was tabling with a student organization. You yourself had problems tabling on campus.
They seem to have developed a very closed campus attitude about people from the community. They like to come to the community and do their damage, but they don't want to go up there trying to provide influence and information and education to these young people. And I think that at least my experience has been that they're eager to get another side or all sides that they possibly can of a story before and making up their own minds and not just getting spoon-fed, as a lot of folks in the academic world seem to want to do to young people.
You're running for supervisor for the 3rd District, and that race is coming up in 2 months. You are applying for a city body at a recent series of interviews, weren't you? A couple of city bodies?
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. I ran into the council member whose appointment it was, and she informed me that the sign should have read, "Men need not apply," because she was wanting a woman in the first place. And since I don't fit that gender qualification, I probably should have... I just wasted my time, as well as, I think, 4 or 5 other men.
Well, I should suggest the obvious. What about your commitment to a sex change?
I've given that up for political office.
I see. So
you got to spend your money somewhere.
I see. Oh, that's a good point. You've got flyers to put out. So what commissions were you looking to be on, Michael?
Well, I had applied as a first priority to the Downtown Commission, given my experience on Vision Santa Cruz and with the Chamber of Commerce and being a business owner myself, and also applied for the Zoning Board, which they decided to do away with, I understand, the Planning Commission, which I didn't think I stand much of a chance on that one, and also the Police Review Board. But it was clear that they had pretty much their minds made up going into these open public meetings. Who they wanted to have in the first place. It was kind of an academic exercise, but I guess it gave them a chance to sit in the council chambers and listen to us in the audience and us at the podium try to make our case.
What do you think are the major issues that voters should look to at the city level and at the county level in the next couple of months? That whether you win or lose, what are the issues that you're going to continue to be pushing on?
Well, I think as we saw in our Voices from the Village, obviously homelessness is a critical issue in the minds of a lot of Santa Cruz folks. It was probably the most questions we received, the three candidates in the Voices from the Village interview we had on Wednesday. I also think that housing affordability is a critical one. Here we are in a university community, university town, and yet we are a single-family residential community. We're not building multifamily housing or even student housing as far as that goes. And I think that's an issue, especially given the state's ruling and the agreement that was forced on the county yesterday by the Monterey Bay Area Council of Governments, which states that we have to make up half of the 23,130 homes or units that need to be built between now and 2007, or we'll suffer further state sanctions, which I think could be crippling to us socially and economically.
The controversy that's been talked about a lot on the air today, by me anyway, around the issue of privatizing the area between the two kiosks in front of New Leaf Market, you're probably familiar with this controversy. You have any stance on that?
Well, it's I don't know. It seems to me that we have freedom of assembly, at least I thought we did, and as long as people are behaving in an appropriate, socially acceptable manner and not, breaking the law or trying to cause damage to people's property or to individuals walking by, they should have the right to sit and communicate. That's why we had kind of this rolling plaza concept that was envisioned in Vision Santa Cruz. At the same time, we probably should be looking at places where we do allow certain people to be without the fear of crackdowns and activities. As long as they're law abiding and they're playing by the. By the rules, what's the big deal?
Well, you may have noticed the Kim Bingham story in today's Santa Cruz Sentinel. Maybe you're out of town, I'm not sure, but the Community Forum has a discussion. She's lamenting the Sentinel's business uber alles editorial that they had in the middle of the week. You may remember where, it's okay for businesses, that we must give priority to business owners. They're the true community downtown. And she wrote a very eloquent, I read it earlier in the show, statement about that. Because I've not gotten no responses from the merchants who are, in fact, if not orchestrating, certainly colluding in this collaboration. We're talking about Matisse Selman of Sushi Now and Ali Ka of Alibaba's Cafe. I've called for a boycott of both those businesses to encourage them to understand the community sentiment that people are not going to purchase from businesses that simply want to privatize an area with the specific intention of driving away a class of people. And I'm wondering if you're interested in supporting that boycott.
Well, boycotts have been successful in the past on certain circumstances, and it will be a good test if you're trying to put one together to see if the community rallies to the cause. My fear is they won't, because it seems to me, even in my walking and knocking, I'm picking up a more and more of an attitude of people that they're nervous about going downtown. They have fears about an element that they believe may or may not be there. Probably more of perception than reality, but perceptions often become reality because people who choose not to purchase or make or go downtown will hurt us economically, which has a rippling effect on homeless people and services and a whole variety of things, because we get a lot of that stuff from the tax dollars that are generated from our business districts. So it's a fine-edged sword, but if that's the approach that people want to take, then I say that's what we have a free enterprise system for. That's what we have in a free country that allows people to voice their opinions in constructive manners. And I remember back in the 60s when we were trying to get civil rights for blacks, considering that Martin Luther King's holidays coming up on Monday. The boycotts was a very effective program that sent a strong message to people that, hey, if you don't want to play by the rules, we'll at least let you know how we feel about it economically.
Well, that's nicely finessed there, candidate Schmidt, but are you going to support the boycott? That was the question.
Well, I don't eat sushi, and I don't go to that kiosk place anyway, so it's easy for me to say, yes, I'll support the boycott.
Will you support the boycott?
I won't be eating at any of these establishments, that's for certain.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're ducking the question there, Candidate Schmidt.
I really don't, you know, I don't know. I guess I'm for dialogue over confrontation.
Me too.
And
that's what I've been trying for the last 2 weeks.
And it's disappointing that our city leaders seem to prefer confrontation over dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and that people feel they have to resort to things like boycotts in order to try to get their message across or to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
In a supposedly a progressive community, that should be one of the last things that one should ever have to consider doing.
It should.
Not one of the first.
Can I support the boycott, Candidate Schmidt?
No.
All right, at last, a straight answer. Took me a while to get it out of you, though, didn't it?
Well, I had to give it some thought here.
All right. Listen, I appreciate that. Are there any upcoming events you want to announce you think might be helpful for
us? Well,
those?
We got the People's Democratic Club event on the 24th at the Veterans Hall. I think it starts at 8 o'clock, 7:30, I think, is the initial kickoff. And that's give a chance for the public to hear the three candidates for the Board of Supervisors. I imagine John Laird will be there, and I'm assuming the district attorney candidates will be there as well. So it'll be another chance for the public to size up the three candidates in the 3rd District to see.
That's Thursday.
Thursday at 24th.
Mm-hmm.
And that's at the Vets Hall.
And that's open to the public.
I think that's the biggest. Yeah, it should be open to the public.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Not that I think I would recommend anybody go to such a thing except possibly to see you stand up and perhaps all three candidates refuse to boycott these two businesses downtown. But, hey, I have to pick a nasty issue that will embarrass everybody.
Hey, do what you need to do.
Hey, listen, I'm glad to hear that you are still supporting, it sounds like you're still supporting ending the sleeping ban sections of the camping ordinance.
Still in that. In fact, was in a discussion last night at the NAACP dinner where one person couldn't believe that I was so bold as to suggest that. And then when we had a chance to talk and a chance to explain where I was coming from and why I felt it was important, he said, "Oh, well, I didn't see it from that perspective. Oh, okay, I see where you're coming from. And I see that happening." And so I think, again, if we can get communication and dialogue, but we tend to in this community make the bad guy out of somebody because that makes us feel stronger. Instead of sitting down and saying, "Okay, what constructively can
mm-hmm,
we do,"
mm-hmm.
and working towards a constructive resolution to our differences instead of making somebody the bad guy.
That has been one of your strong points. You've been able to go into groups where they were hostile to the idea of homeless people first having safe places to sleep. You were looking for
and legal places, yeah.
Parking lots, and you were looking mm-hmm. for a couple of the police department, this county building, and you talked to groups of people that were very hostile to this. Or initially were very skeptical and hostile of merchant groups, residential groups, and you sat down and explained your thoughts on this, and I think that through that process, you know, you didn't convince everybody, but you certainly, I think, made some significant impact in that, and you were able to do a dialogue, not to impose things by fiat or decree. You might have found it interesting to be out at the Harvey West Association's meeting some nights ago when old Father Hubbard, as I call him, Don Hubbard of the Harvey West Association, nice enough guy, some wrong-headed ideas about putting up no parking signs to eliminate people who are sleeping in their vehicles in the Harvey West, but who also was holding this large meeting and Camp Paradise folks attended, and there was a discussion of the family shelter that was coming into I guess we'll be taking over the Santa Cruz Service Corps headquarters in 6 or 7 months and cost, I don't know how many millions of dollars to serve a relatively small number of families, considering.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't there for most of the meeting. I just got there at the end. But I think that's the kind of meeting that you were not afraid to go into and actually present an opinion that most people would have said, he's crazy if he thinks he can get away with expressing that kind of an opinion, as this NAACP person said to you, right?
Yeah, and I think it's just, again, when you get people to sit down, I think reasonable people who are willing who are serious about trying to resolve an issue or a problem, we may not, you know, agree on all the approaches, but I think we can come to some reasonable compromise that seems to work for everybody, or at least give us the opportunity for a chance, and that's what we were trying to do with the safe and legal zones. I mean, when I got even the Harvey West Area Association, the Downtown Association, the Mission Street Association, the Chamber of Commerce, to all agree that this was worth trying, and that, you know, with a programmed approach, with good input from the homeless community, that we could, we'd like to give it a try. I think that's all anybody's been asking for, and I think if we would have been able to do that, we would have been able to prove to the community that this was a workable solution, and that it may have actually helped a lot of people instead of just making criminals out of people for the mere act of sleeping.
Yeah. Well, look, is there a number or a website that you can be reached at if people want to, demand that you, support this boycott and change your opinion?
The website is www.voteschmidt.com.
Yeah. www.voteschmidt.com.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the phone number is 252-1410.
2524, and that you actually answered the phone.
I usually try to.
But there's some woman who answered the phone this time. I don't know who she was. Is this one of your floozies?
It was sitting here in the kitchen, so Diane picked it up for me.
I see. So you're claiming this is your wife.
The one I've been with for over 25 years now.
I was afraid of that. Well, I'm not going to inquire any further into this relationship.
Okay, good
Thank
deal.
You. Appreciate
okay,
it.
Okay, you take care.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Thank you, Michael.
Bye-bye.
And that was candidate Michael Schmidt. Even he gets a little... antsy as a politician, ducking here and there on the issue, but I think I still like his answers more than others, and I don't think Marty Wormhout or Mark Premack would be available to come on this show. They've both been invited. Neither of them have responded. I actually have the staff report of the City Council agenda on these amendments to the camping ordinance that are coming back on the 3 o'clock session as item number 24. And there will be food served, by the way, by India Joe Schultz, who's makes a mean and warm and nice hot soup. I don't know if it'll be mean and warm and nice at the same time, but he makes a good soup. And we're going to be serving that probably around 4:30 in the afternoon at City Council for those who want to come to the camping ban ordinance discussion, and or if people want to come to the oral communications in the evening at 7 o'clock, since the hippie planter kiosk deal is a done deal, since the privatization of the sidewalk was already voted 2 weeks ago and is now simply ramming forward. Most of the pressure on that issue, I think, unfortunately, has to come through declarations of a boycott or preparations for a mass assembly on February 1st. Becky Johnson has apparently issued a call. Huff is, I think, pretty much supportive of it, to have people come to town to support the right of the people to assemble on public sidewalks, provided they're not blocking them, and provided they're not harassing people, and provided, I mean, just use the public sidewalks without getting shuffled away by the merchants and their friends in the police department, the downtown association, and the city council. You know, that, we want to maintain diversity in Santa Cruz.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, I think it's a great idea. February 1st, everybody come to town.
I'll bet this is Becky Johnson again.
We'll have an all-night street party on Pacific Avenue.
You just want to keep
this. Starting on February 1st.
What about the folks at the El Centro who need to get some rest?
We'll invite them, too.
Oh, okay. Well, what about... I can't think of anything, any further objections, but have you gotten Mark Premack's okay on this?
Haven't heard back from Mark yet.
Although
he did speak to me for the first time in a really, really, really long time the other day.
Oh, really? That's because you probably were on the show with him, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was sort of producing a little segment.
I guess you were filming one of these softball shows with Mark Premack, and you do a show, Club Cruise, every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 o'clock, right?
I do, on Channel 27, for those who have cable.
You weren't able to reach Kim Bingham, were you? I'm wondering if we'd heard from her. I know that you... occasionally do some outreach for this show.
I have not.
Uh-huh. But what are you calling in for? Just to sort of second the call?
Well, you sounded sort of pretty kind of lukewarm on this February 1st idea.
Mm.
And because we figured it, with the hippie planner being about to be walled off or fenced off or barred off from public use and handed over on a silver platter, gratis, I might add,
mm-hmm.
To the two kiosk renters there, Alibaba and Matisse Selman, that, you know, they also said, Phil Cirilla said that she thought it would take about a month to do, and we figured that that would be February 8th. So February 1st, which is a Friday, by the way, would be before the walling off took place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we had a lot of people showing up and save Hippie Planner for the hippies and for everybody else who wants to sit down without having to pay some money to do so, you know, they should come to town. I mean, there's a thing that homeless services or repealing the sleeping ban would cause a magnet and draw homeless people from all over. How about have an anti-homeless law, or in this case, fencing law of public space where people are gathering? Have that be the magnet for homeless people?
Yeah. Well, of course, it's as Michael Schmidt said. The problem with the boycott and the problem with this kind of an announcement is it's a hard thing to carry out, and it sometimes looks even worse when you make an announcement and then three people show up. It tends to support the other side is the problem. But, you know, as I said, I support such a call, particularly if you can actually get a bunch of people doing it, you know.
Also, I wonder about a boycott of Matisse Selman and Ali Baba's, given that the New Leaf has had a hand in this, given that Peter Eberle of the Downtown Association seems to be pushing this behind closed doors, and that the Del Mar Theater, which the redevelopment agency sunk a lot of money into, is going to be opening up soon, and Hippie Planner's quite close to that. So I think there are a lot of people behind this, and actually, you know, Matisse Selman and Ali Baba are kind of the low man on the totem pole in terms of downtown merchants. And so, you know, I'm sort of torn on that one myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, you and Schmidt apparently are traitors to the cause. But I'll read to you what the pledge says. I pledge not to purchase at Alibaba's Cafe or Sushi Now until those businesses enter into good faith negotiations to maintain the public sidewalk in public hands and find a way of resolving differences that does not involve evicting one group of people from the area entirely. So it is focused on Alibaba and Sushi Now. I suppose it could be expanded to say, and any other businesses involved in this process. That's a little vague. And I think you may have heard me read the petition earlier in the show.
Right.
You know, it does mention all those things you say, the possible involvement of the Del Mar Theaters, George Au and Barry Swinson, the New Leaf Market being...
Not to mention the Sentinel has been trumpeting this for days.
Sure, those things too. But the people who have signed and sealed this deal, without whom it could not go forward, are these two merchants.
That's true.
And the fact is, they have also, at least one of them, has given me repeated promises that he's interested in a mediation. He doesn't seem to be, and I'm beginning to suspect there may be some bad faith here. But more important than that, I don't think there is the time to wait until one business or another decides whether they're going to allow the public the access to the area that the public is entitled to. I mean, this is on public property. And I also think it should be understood, it's not just people who have money or who don't have money are going to be excluded. It's anybody that these two businesses don't like. You can have $100,000 in your pocket, as Jerry Henry did, and you can still end up in the slammer if they don't want you there. So it's not even a matter of money. It's a matter of essentially surrendering authority and autonomy to two private businesses.
That's true. I mean, look at what happened when you were excluded from Georgiana's Cafe, even though you'd never had an incident with them to warrant exclusion.
Now, that was, of course, the doing of former Mayor Neil Coonerty, the owner of the bookshop Santa Cruz, who didn't like our peaceful but vigorous protests against the downtown ordinances, and then blamed us for two rocks that went through his bookshop Santa Cruz window. There was no evidence whatsoever that any of us had anything to do with it. In fact, it was his down anti-homeless laws, I think, that prompted that kind of hostile reaction. Frankly, I think that doing this kind of thing downtown is a way of raising the heat in terms of hostility against merchants who are doing this. And you know, it's hard for me to say to people who are getting angrier and angrier, oh, you know, cool off, mellow out, and so forth, because frankly, I don't think people should cool off and mellow out on these issues. I think they should be very angry about them, and I don't think they should be violent about them, you know, but I mean, when you close off the dialogue, when you do a slam dunk at City Council in 4 days, and then you have the temerity to do this all pretty much behind closed doors on the consent agenda, what do you expect?
Phil Cirillo, the redevelopment agency, and Police Chief Belcher.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, and
in today's Sentinel editorial as well.
Oh, I didn't read the editorial in the Sentinel today.
They're talking about the Peace Park that they want to put up, and that's kind of how the editorial's phrased. Let me pull it up here, but let me read just a couple lines out of the editorial. It says, "We also have to wonder whether any of the council members actually walk downtown, especially at night, and see exactly how these downtown gathering places are used. No one knows exactly why, but the Santa Cruz downtown is well known for groups of people who gather for reasons that, frankly, don't serve the interests of most Santa Cruzans. We can politely call these reasons social issues, and let's just say that they require the attention of law enforcement way too often.
A word to the wise should be sufficient. We don't want their kind in our neighborhood."
And then a little further down it says, "There are already many, maybe too many, gathering places downtown, and there are a lot of people around Santa Cruz County who really don't feel comfortable in these gathering places."
Mm-hmm. Right. And, of course, that argument is no doubt used against the public plaza, too. And it's probably used against the legislature, and it was used against the Republic back in the 1700s. And it was, there are plenty of people who don't feel comfortable with processes.
They're pushing that the downtown is only for merchants and only for shoppers who are coming to purchase goods from those merchants, and that there's no legitimate reason for people in the community gathering together in small groups to visit or talk or watch people watch. It's insane, you know. Of course, they don't have any problem if, say, like on first night, they want crowds of people down there. They're not worried about blocking the sidewalk or barring people from coming. The more the merrier, really, as long as it's those kinds of people. But if they're the young people, the dreadheads, I call them, people who are fashion challenged. A lot of them are young people. This is the undesirables, the city is willing to very blatantly take actions in both architectural, in terms of law enforcement and drafting ordinances to move along that class of people.
Yeah, we saw that up in Berkeley where they had these actual spiked seating areas where they put them
butt spikes.
Butt spikes, I guess they were called. You couldn't sit down because there were these big spikes. They were along the edges of banks and so forth, down along Shattuck Avenue. It was kind of creepy. Yeah.
I just don't understand this Sentinel calling for that. There's too much seating space on Pacific Avenue. Clearly, there's not enough.
Well, yeah.
I feel sorry for the poor senior citizen who needs a place to sit down to rest when they're
Well, you got to remember, that the entire mall was turned from a very pedestrian-friendly area where there was great amounts of sitting space on the mm-hmm. brick planters. And
lots of places you could sit down in the sun and
right,
eat your lunch.
And places in the shade and leafy, mm-hmm. huge leafy trees. And this was all essentially at the instigation of the police department and then Chief Bassett and forwarded by Wormhout and Laird, who initially pushed it as a pilot project in the weeks before the earthquake and then used the earthquake as an opportunity to turn it into a complete sterilization of the downtown.
Well, I think didn't the Downtown Commission do a study a couple years ago about why people come downtown, and they found that only 17% of the people come downtown to shop?
I remember some stats. I don't remember what they were. I think you were actually studying them at one time, and you probably have a better recollection of them than I do. But the downtown as it is, as you pointed out, has been sterilized and policified, and already you see these police measures like video cameras appearing, the use of loud music to drive away people from Hippie Planter onto the public sidewalk, the arrogant notion that while somebody, a lowrider in a car with a loud radio, or a man with a boombox, a woman with a boombox on the street playing it can be accused of excessive noise, but it's okay to have this kind of stuff blaring out of the host center. That's where it's coming from. That's what I found yesterday when I was down there. host hospitality worker Terry, the tall black man who's the host there, acknowledged that he was told by the city council, as he put it, to play this music downtown, or maybe it's the city council staff, to get rid of the young people down there. I mean, you know, this is, he couldn't quite say all that, but when we were asking him, this is excessive noise, we want to file a complaint with the police department, that this is blasting at people on the sidewalk who are trying to enjoy the public space, the police would not come and take a complaint, and we generally got the word that this was arrogantly intended, to monopolize the areas downtown for a certain class and mindset of people. And to me, this is very, very bad.
Well,
I bet it's very bad for you, too.
Well, I've certainly opposed this walling off of hippie planner. And although I think it's so short-sighted, because these people are just going to move up the street in front of O'Neill's Surf Shop.
Anything coming up on the club cruise this week?
I think we're going to replay Mayor Chris Krohn's interview.
That's something we were going to play today, was selections from Chris Krohn's Talk About show, which happened last Wednesday on KZSC. I mean, I didn't have time to do it because of my inability to properly...